Good evening. My name is Terry Thornton. I'm Curator of Education, and it's my great pleasure to welcome you to Tuesday Evenings at the Modern. An ongoing series happens every week through, I think, this fall. It'll be November 15th, if that's a Tuesday. Off the top of my head, it's November 15th with Katie Siegel. A lot of good ones between now and then. I encourage you to get online and check out the schedule. And soon, almost too soon for me, the spring schedule will be up online as well. So that's the place to get all your info. So check out the website. We're having a really great season this fall. I have to say, I always think they're the best, but this one's really good. I think I have a lot of people in the audience that would agree. Next week, we have Dr. Frances Colpett here to share her insights that she has gathered over her very distinguished career as an art historian, art critic, and longtime corresponding editor to Art in America, as well as, I have to say, I happen to know a very, very recent and actually quite personal search that she's been doing on this topic. She's come to some revelations that I hope you'll be here for on the topic of problems and possibilities of abstract painting in the postmodern electronic age. I'm looking forward to it, and I hope you'll come back and bring a friend. Tonight, we are fortunate to have Jason Musson. You know what? I never ask you, Jason. How do you pronounce your last name?
Musson.
Okay, thank you. I meant to ask you that. Piece of business I did not take care of. I'm not in my right mind, allergies and all. Anyway, we are very fortunate to have Jason Musson here from New York, where he recently moved after receiving his BFA in photography from the University of Arts in Philadelphia and an MFA in painting from the University of Pennsylvania, two schools that are no doubt bursting with pride for having educated the likes of Jason Scott Musson. Truly a bright and discerning artist and writer and musician, Jason has his finger firmly on the pulse of this world. From politics to art, he uses his superpowers for good by shedding light on real issues with the steely intelligence and sharp wit of great comedians and other cultural provocateurs, as seen most overtly, I guess, in his online performances as Hennessy Youngman, but also evident in other works, including his Phantom Limb drawings, Pink Robot cartoons, the column Black Like Me, The State That I Am In, which he wrote for the Philadelphia Weekly while in school there. Between Philadelphia and his move to New York, Jason attended Skowhegan School of Painting and Sculpture this summer. Showing his work internationally, recent solo exhibitions have included... Oh, excuse me. This is going to happen. I was racing it. I thought I was going to get through before I had to actually use my Kleenex. Nantani, the hard sell at Marginal Utility Gallery in Philadelphia, and Too Black for BET at Dazed and Confused Magazine Gallery in London, with group shows such as I Feel Like I'm Disappearing, Getting Smaller Every Day, But When I Look in the Mirror, I'm Bigger in Every Way. Great title. At the West Gallery in the Netherlands this year, and Syncopation at Grimm Museum in Berlin, Germany in 2010. On November 4th, Jason opens an exhibition at the Philadelphia Fine Arts Academy. And in September, Jason was part of a prestigious annual panel at the MCA in Chicago, this year focusing on museums and diversity. In addition to Jason participating on the panel, Hennessy gave a performance slash PowerPoint presentation on the millennials. And I very much encourage you to get online and see that. It's fantastic. A review for ArtNet magazine made it clear that while everyone involved behaved, which I guess is a good thing for panels at the MCA, the audience was there for only one reason, to see Hennessy Youngman's first ever live performance of his acclaimed YouTube show, Art Thoughts. And tonight, we have the distinction of hearing from the artist himself, who I think we nabbed just before he got too busy to accept another invitation to speak. So please help me welcome Jason Scott Musson as Jason Scott Musson.
Hi, everybody. How you guys doing? Good? All right, good. I used to be, I guess I still am, a rapper. So we do that in rap. We ask you how you're doing, even if we don't really care. And, Terry, thank you for the intro. If I want you to write my eulogy. It was really good. My bio on my website's like, you know, I wrote that in like 2 seconds, so that's like a really good synopsis. So my name is Jason, aka Jason Musson, and I'm gonna, you know, show you guys some art. I've never really talked. I mean, I did that panel in Chicago. Was it like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago? But I've actually never actually talked about my art in public. So this is new. So, you know, that's an apology. And so this is just a nice starting image. It's like real cultish and placid. It's green fields. It's pretty optimistic. I went to school in Philadelphia. I started school, went to school for photography at the University of the Arts. And I think when I started my relationship with photography, I was really interested in street photography, like Cartier-Bresson and Robert Frank. Kind of this kind of gritty kind of, I guess, you know, like realism, just documentary style. But I've always been a clown. I like laughing. And the first project I did where I was actually able to marry kind of photography, this kind of photography and my sense of humor was with this Post Lollipop project. And this was might have been 2000, maybe 2001. I'm not really sure. It's a long time ago. The towers were still up. But so Post Lollipop was the series of double exposures with the Powerpuff Girls and pornography, which kind of, I think that it was a VHS tape, so that's how long ago it was. And it was my roommate's VHS tape. I don't think he actually used it. I used it more than he did. I was a pretty lonely dude, so, you know. So basically, I mean, the gist of Post Lollipop was kind of this juxtaposition between these two forms of pleasure that are, you know, separated by age, pretty much. You know, I mean, I still like cartoons as a grown ass man, but I definitely, you know, this there's this kind of, I don't know, there's a link between the saturated color of the Powerpuff Girls, the cartoon, and this kind of this pornography. So I'm just gonna go through some of these. You know, this for me, this is kind of like, for me being the young, if there's any kids in here, I don't know if there are, I can't really see. Your parents should be averting your eyes right now. It's not my job to make sure you don't see these things, because you're gonna see these things eventually. You know, this is like a breakthrough for me, because I don't know. When I was in high school, I was, you know, I read a lot of literature by the Black Panthers, like Bobby Seale and Eldridge Cleaver. So I kind of came from this like kind of like teenage socialist background. But I was, like I said, I was always this clown. So this series was like, finally, I kind of arrived at kind of something serious and something funny. And so this was like a kind of like a milestone. And I think this might be the template for everything I've ever done since then. That's Mojo Jojo. I don't know if you guys know Mojo Jojo. And this was like a kind of a censored porn, too. It wasn't really that graphic. And there is actually one graphic image that I've spared that I didn't put in there. I don't want you guys to, you know, leave. It's like, like your eyes were burned. And, you know, I don't know. This is, I kind of, while I was in school for photography, fell out of love with photography. Look, I'm trying to talk serious, and yeah. It was, you know. As I was, you know, this is, I think, the final image in that series. And if, I'm sorry if this series kind of, you know, started this really badly, but for those who are offended, here's a picture of Ryan Gosling. I know that people love Ryan Gosling, so that's how I'm gonna apologize for everything. So while I was in undergrad, my best friend who owned that porno VHS tape, his name is Kurt Hunt. We grew up together, actually, and he moved to Philadelphia like a year after I did. I've known him since we were 10. We created this fake gang while we were in undergrad called the Knives. And we made these kind of, I don't know how it really started, but we made these, we bought postal, we stole postal stickers from the post office, and we would write like these kind of like weird, verbally abusive slogans on them, and we put them around our school. And it got to a point where it went from the postal stickers, and I got a job as a computer lab monitor. And then so I worked at Pearl at the time, so I stole like tons and tons of sticker paper. And then I was learning how to use Quark Express, which is like a really old version of InDesign. And so we took these verbally abusive stickers and started putting them all around University of the Arts. And they actually, it was really bad. They wanted to find the person who was doing this and kick them out. And the Knives, after a while as a computer lab monitor, you can kind of go crazy a little bit. So what used to be like really pithy kind of short slogans, something like this became these kind of these like really long rants. You know, I'd just be in the computer lab writing and writing and writing to myself. And this started kind of. This is actually a poster from the series. The series is called Too Black for BET, and I started it in 2001, where I took those quick stickers that me and Kurt were making, and then I would expand them into larger format work. And this is while I was still a photography undergraduate. I kind of stopped taking pictures and started focusing more on writing and kind of drawing and printmaking. This is the most popular image from that series. Beware of persuasive men with beards. And this actually, obviously, this came about after 9/11, where, a man of my beardedness in tandem with my complexion, people were looking at me a little bit differently on the street. You know, I was no longer an earnest art student. I was, the rapist of democracy or something. And so, I ride my bike a lot in Philly, and I definitely was, called Osama and things like that. I actually kept an American flag in my pocket sometimes as a joke. I would just like wave it at cars when they were like yelling at me. It was and one time I was riding in Philadelphia with two friends of mine. We were going to like a bar or something, and these drunk like frat dudes just yelling like Osama at me. And I had this flag I don't know why I had this flag, and I just like picked it up and started like waving it around. Like all the cars started like honking on the street. Like everyone was like a real proud moment for the country. And this was also the mailer for the show too. I had like 400 cards of these, and I shoved them into this post office mailbox. And I realized how stupid that was. I definitely think I'm on some kind of list, but that's a long time ago. This is 2001, and so the next few slides are just some text pieces. Some of them are short, some of them are long. So if you read them, if you're done reading, I need someone who's a slow reader here. Raise your hand when you're done. Okay. So, some of them I don't expect you to read at all because this is the problem of working with text and not like big sculptural text like. My process is very much, it's about the writing. It's not really about the graphic design. I mean, my graphic design is really, really terrible. So for me, the experience of someone going to a gallery and seeing something like this is like not really the look, but more so the actual, like the narrative. So, all right, you guys are done? This next one is really, really long. I have a lot of, me and my white friends, they like to joke about, being Puerto Rican. If you're a certain kind of... This one, tell me when you guys get to the end. Yeah. Don't ever use tech. Don't ever do work like this, ever. Seriously, you're not going to sell anything. And I'm not even getting to grad school yet. Yeah. is... And now this, the scale of this is 3 feet by 5 feet, and I would reproduce these for the gallery. I show this at this gallery, this kind of like collective gallery in Philly called Space 1026. And this physically is just a large photocopy. You know, it's made on an architectural printer. You can, like, going to Kinko's, since people at Kinko's don't really want to help you do anything, this is like a machine that you have to use yourself. So I was able to make, you know, produce this show... these pieces for free, you know. I really didn't want to spend any money on making art. I looked at it as like a total compromise of my values about spending any money on art. So while going to art school, so don't, it's a conflict. So yeah, too black for BT. There's this. I'll try to talk about the themes when you're done. This is 2001, yeah. See, the themes in Too Black for BT, also that phrase itself comes from a Wu-Tang song called Live at the MGM, where it's Raekwon and Ghostface going back and forth between each other, and that's where that line, that phrasing comes from. And, you know, the themes are race, racism, sex, not really sexism, drugs, you know, politics. I don't know. Humor has always been a pretty good vessel for me in kind of dealing with politics. Because I feel, you know, because as a younger person, I was so kind of, you know, not necessarily politically engaged, but politically conscious. And I felt like kind of making art was kind of a, I don't know, sometimes I feel really guilty about being an artist. Like, it's super, like, it's a privilege to have the luxury of having the free time to, like, lay in my bed and think about art. So, you know, I think humor is a way for me to broach the political. You know, it's definitely a very, very useful vessel for me. And, you know, like I said, I'm a clown. This is my favorite, one of my favorites. You know, you can tell it's old, though. I don't have Sprint anymore. You can tell it's Zoolander, you know, it's old. And terror has always been a theme as well. You guys done? Relatively? All right. Wait, oops. Sorry, dudes. This one's really long. We don't have to read this one, but this is like, I think this is when I kind of went off the deep end in writing. But this kind of long-form writing actually was, helped me kind of become a writer. You know, the Hennessy work that came like way, way later, kind of, it's all that stuff is scripted. So the writing practice started in 2001 when I was a disillusioned undergrad photo kid, not liking photographs anymore. But this one's my favorite one. If you want, I can email this to you. So that was in 2001. Too Black for BT was in 2001. And then I kind of realized my slides are out of order. In sense of kind of what was happening in my life, but there was a second installment called Too Black for BET 2, and this, I'll just breeze through these. This is about sleeping with Hermione from Harry Potter, because I'm really attracted to intelligence, so, you know, she's always, you know, she might be stuck up, but Hermione gets it done when it has to get done. She does. I mean, Harry does too. Ron is kind of like the comic foil, but you know, this one's short. You know, this one, the next one, My Million Dollar Idea. This is probably one of my favorite ones too.
You guys done? All right.
I'm going to go on to the next.
Okay. Are you okay? Are you hyperventilating? I have some water up here if you need some. All right. You done? Who's that whimpered like that? Okay. So I'm waiting for that to be produced. And the next one's, you know, is this one. This was 2006. That was the past few ones were 2006. I'm a pretty big Star Wars fan. And again, even though it's 2006, terror is always a theme. You know, Snowball from Animal Farm. You could see Snowball down in the corner to the right, pretending as if he's a victim. Again, gentrification. It's about using decommissioned battleships as lofts. All these images are culled from the internet, and I feel sorry for the couple on a horse. Now they're a part of fine art, you know? This will last longer than their marriage, so maybe one day they'll see this and sue me. That one. And while I was in the last year, I was an undergrad, and definitely while I made the second part of Too Black for BE2, I made rap music with this group called Plastic Little. And this is Plastic Little. To the left is Kurt with the sunglasses. He's the owner of the pornography tape, and my friend I made the stickers with. In the middle was my friend Michael Stern, his producer. He's the producer. His name is Squid, Michael Squid, and he actually started writing graffiti as Squid, so we weren't allowed to call him Squid anymore, and he would get mad, even though it was his name for like 5 years. And I remember one time we got into an argument, and I was like, what do you want me to call you, like Michael Ferrari? And he's like, yes. So Michael Ferrari became his nickname. And that's John on the right. John's my, we met at University of the Arts. We all went to UArts together in Philly, so we all met at art school. I've known Kurt since we were like 10 or 9 years old. While I was working on art, I was also making music and kind of being, I know this is going to be on the internet, but I was kind of like a derelict, I was a bum. When you're in a band and you're in like, either you're in art school, you're an artist, there's a certain kind of lifestyle that comes with it. So, I did stuff like this, this is me and Kurt. Together, and the thing is we had the good fortune of being able to tour a lot in the last few years of Plastic Little. This is us in London. I don't know where this is. Probably in London. That's in Philly. That's at this place called the Medusa Lounge. And Medusa Lounge is like Keith Haring. The interior is like a Keith Haring painting on heroin. It's like crazy in there. And this is, we're kind of like, at the time, it was kind of this, it was hip-hop, but it was definitely kind of like a part, it was like party rap, but kind of abrasive, kind of like my posters, where there's humor involved in Plastic Little, but there was definitely a sharp, there's a harshness to it almost. And it was hip-hop, but it also kind of crept over into punk, because hip-hop is kind of like sometimes a little bit too polished, and when we would perform, we were kind of like monkeys, this is Kurt. That's my friend Narissa. And it feels really good to show these images at a museum too, of rapping at real shitty clubs. What else is next? And so basically, and I'm going to play like a Plastic Little song. This is one of our first songs. I was like super young, sound like Steve Urkel in this rap, but while we listen to it, you can look at Ryan Gosling. So, wait, okay, oops, that's the next one. There's two songs. Hold on, this first song is called Foil, and Foil is kind of Foil is about not having enough money to buy gold fronts, gold teeth. So you just use foil instead of the gold teeth. We're young, we're stupid, So I'm not going to play the whole thing. It's like a 5-minute song. And actually, anytime we tried to perform Foil, to this day, We just can't get to the end of it. I don't remember the lyrics. But yeah, so, you know, you can... Make this louder. I want to really annoy people. Thanks.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm looking good for tonight. I got some fly shit on. Fly shirts, fly pants. I have my gators getting on. These women gonna love the fuck out of me. Chris, I just say he's half to love the fuck out of me. Chris, I showed up. Yo, what the deal, yo? I said separate town and a water top. But I'm missing something now. My repertoire. I think it's that fly boy by Rockies. Cause I really hate to dig in my pocket. I really fucking hate to dig in my pockets. So baby girl, I'll ask you out for dinner. But you pay for us both because of the marriage is staying up broke. I rock foil when I wore the floss. I rock foil because I have no choice. I rock foil because silver costs too much. I rock foil because I ride the bus.
Yeah, I rock foil. Fuck saran wrap. Make your hands clap. Drink three fourths of King and all. Make your neck snap back and back. I like to wrap up everything from chicken wings on out of franken beans. Just so obscene. Fuck the Tupperware. I'm the aluminum king. And you're a game friend. Got that Reynolds bling bling. Now you're both valuable. The ways you solve that. Shop right, shop right. First out of inner last bitch, it's unstoppable. Make your water heater pipe work right when it's on time. Wrap us some cake, leave it out all night. Even the strongest could be rap, couldn't get in without a fight.
Let me in, God, let me in, cousin. Let me in, God, let me in, cousin. Let me in, God, let me in, cousin. Let me in, God, yo, let me in, cousin.
I rock foil while I'm at the club. I rock foil while I'm sitting on dubs. I rock foil. You will get punched. I rock foil. Bitch, I'll eat your baby for lunch.
I rock foil because I'm all grown up. Mama, bitch, I'm leaving. So don't wait up. I'm gonna take the drink first chance. Get a job downtown. Sell the clothes to your pants. Go to the dance. Blink it from the neck.
Yeah, so that's foil. That was like really when me and Kurt first started Plastic Little, we didn't have any beats of our own, so we would just like write raps to songs that we liked. Like foil, what did we write foil over? I forget. I think it was like The Message or something, like Grandmaster Flash, and we would like write over like instrumentals by Stereo Lab, just like whatever we can get our hands on to write to. And this is another song off of the next. This is another. You know, if you see Ryan Gosling, I think this might be the last Ryan Gosling image. But this song, the next song, is off of our second album called "She's Mature," and this is a song that somehow there's demons on my side or angels. We were able to do a song with Ghostface Killer, and this song is called "Cambodia." And this is from 2007, 8, I don't know. Oh, come on, dude. What you doing, man?
Banana boat, not banana ramble blow. It means I got a lot of coke. Cop throwing rings in the rope. Pack of rats, he's a pro. You were just a so-and-so. Nigga, nobody know. Just a local zero. Nobody's hero. Nobody's top. Time to figure out. Back to the beginning of like we can blow. When they can blow, yo, homie, it's so simple. Cambodia, Romeo, it's a rodeo. Golden monkey, so for ass, 700 club. Like, oh, yo, yo, yo. Holly, holly, I'm supreme. Most we love it, we can't seem to get enough of these. Little, we wear it well like our bars. Yo, homies, you call those pieces squad. Go home, you say, homie, go home. Come back tomorrow when you got the dope hook of blue. Go make a statement, no shame in name shit. It is J-O-N, rain forest, pimp, man. The same kid sleeping in the club. I snuck in the back way, took the nap. All you motherfuckers get the gas face. Yo, grab the ashtray. I'm about to celebrate it Saturday. And I'm not dead to celebrate on that other bit. Hold my dick in quicksand, man. Cambodia will grab a hold of you quick and never let go. Stop your face like a step show. This is different world. Wayne Wayne's got the best pillow. And dress code by Espo on the best for life. Flight 93, yo, let's go. Bank rock in the headphone. Coke and wet, your wedding coat. I'll do it till I'm 50 and broke. For a 20 to smoke and flame. Yo, anybody wanna know about it? Tell them ass bomb and billow. He'll show them about it.
Yeah, so that's like, I mean, we had two albums.
like, we think we made like 40 songs maybe over the course of like 8 years. And you know, we traveled a lot. And music, I mean, art, making art's important for me, but music definitely was what I did through like my entire 20s, you know, like having my gas turned off, not having heat, from many broken relationship to many broken relationship, there was always Plastic Little. So it's kind of like, if I wasn't making anything visual, I always had the music and the writing. And, you know, it's pretty important. But I haven't figured out how to really work it into this yet. Now, this next series is called Barack Obama Battles the Pink Robots. That actually came about from the concept for this body of work came about from touring with Plastic Little. I was in Europe a lot in 2007 and 2008, and I was really, really, really surprised that in Europe there was, you know, this same kind of fever for Obama that people had in 2008. It was also, you know, it was in Europe too, and I was really surprised that Europeans would even care about American politics. I mean, I know they hate George Bush, you know. I mean, that's a given in Europe. But the fact that they were not just blasé about an American presidential candidate, but actually excited, you know. I was like, this is crazy that these European kids are, like, wearing Obama T-shirts. This is, like, nuts. Like, they should be spitting on me right now. I'm an American. So then this idea of making this series of paintings came about because, you know, I started thinking about Obama's mythology then and kind of this, he had this do-no-wrong mythology that he was going to fix, you know, all the ills of our grand republic. And so this kind of, you know, hope and trust in a politician is something I've never seen in my lifetime. And so, I kind of related it to kind of like a faith that children have in adults. And this is where this, I wanted to make a series of kind of a children's paintings about Obama's mythology. And it was, you know, Barack Obama Battles the Pink Robots. And the next few images are from that series. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Abu Ghraib is still open, but this is all painted in tempera paint. This is like I can't say it's the worst paint to paint in because it's not toxic, but you can't, it's children's paint, so you can't, you know, you have to, I'm a writer, you know, so touching pigments, it's like, I'm dirty, what happened to me, you know? But it's just you have to, like, lay down a color and wait for it to dry, and you can't speed it up with, like, you can't speed up the process or the paint will crack. It's really poster paint. It's not really meant to be, you know, really, like, color laid upon color. Because these kind of look like screen prints, but they're the worst paints ever, and I'm really impatient, too. When I used to silk screen, I was, like, the most impatient printmaker. I have ink in my elbows. Barack, yes, he has superpowers throughout this, by the way. You know, he's the size of a passenger jetliner here. But these are fun to make. I mean, I kind of, after a while, you work in a certain way, whether it's writing or through, like, ink drawing. There, the two images that were there before I started speaking were two of my drawings. My drawings are pretty controlled, and so this was a really, really good way to kind of empty out a vocabulary and kind of just, you know, start fresh. And also, it was pretty playful. This one is my favorite. This one's called Cloverfield. Because anytime I watch Cloverfield, I keep thinking of it as an analogy for a fair of Islam, you know. So, yeah, it might have been the first one. He can travel through time as well. He's a time traveling. That's a quote from Terminator 2. This is my personal favorite. Yeah.
And this is, you know, this is, I kind of did this. This is right before I started grad school too, and so I continued this kind of style of painting in grad school, just to seeing, you know, how it would feel to kind of work in this way without Obama as a protagonist. So the next few are from that as well. It actually felt really good to paint that way too. To recreate that Matisse painting was like, you kind of tap into someone else's energy when you're working that way. It's like, and Matisse is kind of like, I kind of really like Matisse, but don't tell anyone that. Hennessy likes Matisse, you know, like no. You know. Again. If there are any cowboys in the crowd, I'm sorry. We can talk afterward. I tried making some clay figures of some of these paintings, but they've all been destroyed because I don't know how to treat anything nicely. I know they did a lot in Rome. They just didn't do that, you know. What's next? And this is my first semester in grad school. I did these paintings, and I then also, while traveling, one time I was in Liverpool and I saw this T-shirt, this vacation or beach T-shirt, and it had this phrase on it. It was kind of like a "Where's the beef" T-shirt. It said, "What did it say?" It said, "I'm not fat, I'm pregnant." And that T-shirt, I laughed so hard when I saw the T-shirt. It was not a good joke. Even if it was just a punchline, it was a really bad one. But something about the shirt was kind of intoxicating for me, because as a writer, as you saw in the Too Black for BET work, there's such work to constantly kind of imbue a work with humor that makes people want to stay engaged with it, even if it is. You know, text is really hard to keep people in, and being kind of comical is not. I mean, it's easy if you're kind of on a depraved end, but it's kind of hard. And so, seeing this T-shirt was kind of fascinating, because it was something I was trying to be funny, and it's probably funny to some people. It wasn't really funny to me, but I don't know. I decided that I wanted to make my own series of vacation-styled T-shirts. It was called the Hard Sell, because I mean, they're, you know, things like this, and I drew that as well. These I only put the nice ones in too, so. And again, you know, it's this same thing with the children's paintings. It was kind of this emptying out of a previous vocabulary, and it's kind of, for me in grad school, it was a way to kind of start fresh after years of kind of focusing more so on music than visual art. So it was kind of a reintroduction into you know, a graphic language, a visual language. Yeah, the guy who printed this shirt, he really liked it and kept a copy of it. It's an Italian dude. And these are, you know, the reactions you're having is kind of the reactions you're supposed to get to, because it wanted them to be these kind of shirts, you know, that supposed to, these vacation shirts, through their like kind of simplistic humor, are supposed to, you know, point away from kind of the life that's lived. You know, vacation, the need to have a vacation, kind of, it's implicit that there's a life that needs to be escaped, and so these kind of shirts kind of point back to that kind of life. I didn't draw that tombstone. That's, again, called from the internet. And this is my personal favorite. Wait, oops. And these I exhibited this year in Philly. And this kind of brings me You know, there's a lot of drawings I didn't show because I don't really know, you know, it's kind of, they're kind of weird to kind of talk about. But this first semester grad school, this kind of brings me like kind of up to date to where the Hennessy Project began, because these t-shirts and those paintings did not go over well at the end of my first semester in grad school. And also coming back into making art, and in graduate school, you're acquiring this critical language about art, and kind of definitely felt that I was outside of the conversation that I was learning about. And again, being a fan of a dissonance, you know, that same dissonance you saw in the post lollipop photographs, I don't know how the idea came to me, but I thought it would be interesting to have. I don't really consider myself a performance artist. I consider myself a writer, but I definitely considered the kind of dissonance between, say, a deaf comedy jam comedian. Deaf Comedy Jam was a comedy program on HBO in the early 90s. It was all black and Latino comics, some white comics, some really brave white comics, I think. But it was mostly African-American comics. But this kind of comedian talking about fine art and, you know, what would be the result of that kind of cultural dissonance. And so, you know, that, you know, then you get into Hennessy. And the Hennessy Project started in the spring of 2009, yeah, after my first semester and having a really bad final review and kind of, I mean, like, all right, fuck you guys. I don't, you know, take your grad. You know, I kind of had an adversary relationship with my faculty. And so I started working on the Hennessy Project without them. I didn't share the work with my faculty. So I was working on this stuff. But during that second semester, I was showing them work. I had, like, a bunch of crap on my floor in my studio. And I would kind of just, you know, falsely agonize over what direction to take this, like, hanger on the floor, all while I was working on this. Because when someone tells you that you can't make a certain kind of art, that something you're making isn't art, then depending on your disposition, you're not going to really like them. You're not going to really respect them. So, so I just was making this stuff. I was sharing it with my peers and other students I went to school with at UPenn. But not my faculty. I didn't. Their opinions didn't mean anything to me anymore. They came from a different world than I did, and so I was going to have fun with their world. And so the whole semester I was showing this fake work that I knew I wasn't going to show them in my final review. And then at the end of my spring semester, I showed them the first few Hennessy videos. And again, the Hennessy as a character, definitely this. When I first conceived of him as this deaf comedy jam comedian, It played on the, you know, this kind of black comedic trope, which deals with the difference between white people and black people. It's a pretty long tradition that, I mean, dates back to, I mean, at least recorded to, like, the abolitionist era. Is there something to play here? Yeah. So basically, like, someone as recent as Richard Pryor. I have a Richard Pryor clip, so you can kind of get an example where this initial notion of Hennessy kind of comes from.
Cops!
Oh, wait, and this is him talking about, I'm using Keynote for the first time, and I don't know what I'm doing. And so, yeah, Richard Pryor is definitely a good example of that. I just wanted to share a clip of Richard Pryor talking about the difference between black people and white people in relationship to police officers.
Cops put a hurting on your ass, man, you know? They really degrade you. White folks don't believe that shit. Don't believe cops degrade you. Oh, come on. Those beatings, those people are resisting arrest. I'm tired of this harassment of police officers. Because the police live in your neighborhood, see? And you be known them as Officer Timpson.
Hello, Officer Timpson. Going bowling tonight? Yes, nice pinto you have.
Niggas don't know I'm like that. See, white folks get a ticket, they go,
hey, officer, yes, glad to be of help.
Nigga got to be talking about, I am reaching into my pocket for my license.
So, yeah, that's kind of, you know, it's a motif in black comedy. And the first Hennessy video that I actually made was this live at the Laughway House, where the audio is really, really bad. I messed up recording it. This is the first time I shot it. I didn't really know kind of where I was going to take the character. And so I wanted to recreate a comedy club setting where I'm talking about the difference between white artists and black people. But the audio is really bad because I had to go back in and overdub it because I didn't get any audio. So I had to go back into it with like my like iPhone headphones and record it into Final Cut Pro. So I apologize in advance for the audio quality of this. There we go.
All right. And without further ado, I would like you all to give a warm Laughway House round of applause to my nigga, Hennessy Youngman.
Yeah. Y'all ever notice how white artists be like, well, my artistic practices, and niggas is like, I just make shit. Yeah. Y'all ever notice how white artists be like, well, the conversation I'm having in my work is, and niggas is like, my work spelled this, dick. White artists talk like broken robot can't compute. Yeah, y'all ever notice how white artists be like, well, surely he's making an institutional critique with this work. And niggas be like, institutional critique? Y'all talking about prison? Been there once, cause they like to go back. Kinda like my butthole looking pink. That don't even make no sense. Hold on, Henny needs some Henny. Joe, y'all ever notice how white artists be like, well, my project is, and niggas is like, projects? My cousin Jamil over the projects. Can't say I visit him too often, though. Kind of like being alive. All right, y'all. Y'all been a great crowd tonight. Hennessy loves y'all. Before I go, I'd like to say one thing. Take my bitch, please. Peace out.
Yeah, and with that, you know, that's like, with that video, I mean, it's pretty rough. It's kind of, he's really kind of stuck in the original notion of you know, this comedian character. But out of that, I think I still kind of got a lot from that. And I was actually really, really, really unhappy with that first video, and I was actually going to take it like off of YouTube and not make it public, but I decided just to keep it there. And I was so unhappy with it, though, that I took the same material and I just sat in front of my webcam and just did the same material, and it worked so much better than me trying to be, you know, technically proficient, like triple sync. I'm impatient. So, doing it in front of the webcam and having such a simple format allowed me to really focus on, you know, the performance of Hennessy and focus more on the writing and the dialogue, not, you know, creating this environment that doesn't really exist. And so the next one is, I'm going to show the Bruce Nauman video, which is, I think, the third one. So let me see if I can go back. Yeah.
Yo, what's up, internet? I'm in the middle of my exercises right now. Hold on one second. Hold on. 4,000. All right, hold on.
That shirt is so big.
Hold on one second. I gotta try out some shit. Hold on.
Yeah. Sorry about the internet. Just, you know, fucking, I was just doing my exercises and shit. Y'all ever notice how white artists, they always be bringing up motherfucking cracker named Bruce Nauman? Bruce Nauman did this. Bruce Nauman did that. Bruce Nauman saved the planet from a motherfucking asteroid. Basically, today I'm gonna help you, you know, avoid the pitfalls of copying Bruce Nauman, walking in the motherfucker's footsteps, so you can be original. So one, you know, you like water, right? The water, you know, 75%, 70% of the planet's covered in water. You know, so you maybe you want to work with water in your art. Too fucking late. Bruce Nauman already had to work with water. He owns water. Never work with water again. Fuck it. It's over. It's over. Fuck it. Cut it. Don't do it. All right? Two. It's like, you like your hands, right? You like your body. You do shoot your hands. You know, Hennessy, sometimes you get lonely. You know, I touch myself and shit. I don't got no options. You know, but Bruce Nauman, he owns hands, you know? Don't worry about, you can't cast a mold of your motherfucking hands. Don't even take a picture of your hands. Just leave your fucking hands alone. No more hands in your arm. It's over. Pass that. It's crackers, man. I'll tell you, man. So suppose you, you know, you like clowns, right? Oh, clowns are beautiful. Take your little bastard children to the circus. Laugh at the clown. You like clowns, right? Too bad. Bruce Nauman, he owns clowns. He's fucking with clowns before, well before anyone my age was, at least. You into torture? Shit, I'm into torture. You know what? Too bad. Bruce Nauman, he owns torture. You know what I'm saying? And actually, he tortured the fucking clowns. That's fucked up. Come on. Fucked up. Let's see. You been to Chinatown before? You know, you see all the little fucking characters you can't read. Fucking Mandarin, fucking Qui-Gon Jinn shit up there, that neon shit, you know, Bruce Nauman, he owned neon. Nick, he fucked neon so far up the ass that his dick came out neon's mouth. Bruce Nauman, okay, whatever. Put it away. Get off the website where you can order the fucking custom neon for your installation. You can't use it no more. What else? What else we got here? You like, you know, springtime and shit. You like going for a walk and shit. Maybe make a little video piece about walking. But you can't. The nigga Bruce Nauman, you did that shit first, you know, walking like a motherfucking peacock on MDMA. Can't fucking do that shit. It's over, you're done. Stop making art. Bruce Nauman did everything you thought of doing. Maybe, wait, hold on, I'm confused again. Anyway, internet, sorry to depress you today. Most of my videos, I try to instill a little bit of hope in it so you could reach the next level, but there's no levels to reach. So, you know, fill out that job application at Target or Best Buy. So that's it, you know, and rock. Hennessy, one love. Catch me on the internet. Peace, internet. Bye, internet.
Yeah. That, you know, that's like kind of like, or I'm kind of fleshing him out a little better. And I mean, that video, obviously, it came out of Bruce Nauman being brought up a lot in my studio, and kind of, you know, as a young artist, you know, I'm just out of grad school, and you know, there's more so than ever, our access to history is it's a very, 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 very present thing, and I think history is always there, but I think we're our proximity to it is closer, I believe, than any other generation. So I think sometimes we're stuck in this like cipher, this loop of reference, and so Bruce Nauman constantly being brought up. Was like, you know, is there actually any opportunity to make anything like new? Is that a crazy concept? I don't know. But I definitely wanted, after this, I made this video and showed it, they couldn't bring Bruce Nauman up anymore, you know, as someone with a multidisciplined approach. So yeah, they stopped talking about Bruce Nauman in my studio. I think, and this next one is a newer one, but you probably, if you guys have seen on the internet, but, Where are we at? Yeah, I wanted to. Hennessy, you know, talks about art, but this next one is kind of not really about art. About art. Art's only fun some of the time.
Oh, picture.
Young guru. Just Blaze. Killer. Diplomats. Joel Santana. Jim Jones. Freaking Seeky. Half a dash. Y'all niggas dreamed it, I've seen it. Body warm, heart anemic.
What up, internet? This your boy Hennessy Youngman, aka the Pharaoh Hennessy, aka Mr. Museums. I want to welcome y'all to the
obsidian, alcove. It's a special place reserved for special topics. And today, Internet, I want to talk about this theory within the arts called institutional critique. But rather than, you know, talk about the theoretical aspects of institutional critique, I'm just going to go ahead and critique institutions in this video. So I've compiled a list of what I consider personally, you know, the top five institutions worldwide. So, you know, I'm just going to start with institution number five, Rikers Island. Now, Rikers Island is a dope spot, you know, if you're like one of them outgoing, life of the party, Blanche Devereaux type niggas, because at Rikers you get to live in large communal rooms, you know what I'm saying? You know, just living it up. It's like a hostel meets the movie hostel, except there's mad niggas with shivs and shit. But you know, imagine living in a living situation like this. You know, imagine all the fun you could have commingling in an environment like this. This looks like a punching party. That looks like fun. At Rikers, you'll most likely form a tight one-on-one friendship with another inmate, and that inmate becomes your crimey. Now your crimey, that's your eyes, that's in back of you, you know what I'm saying? If you asleep, your crimey watches your sleeping body like a hungry dog watching scraps of food fall from the dinner table, and vice versa. Of course, you gotta do the same thing for your crimey, you know what I'm saying? As he's sleeping peacefully on his stomach, his firm buttocks exposed to the dangers of the world, you being the only thing protecting his sanctimonious mound from the nefarious forces which seek to defile it. You have some real big job, and then I hope you're up to it. Now, if the hyper-social settings of Rikers Island ain't really your thing, but you're still looking for an institution to call your own, then look no further than one of the United States' most treasured joints, ADX Supermax Prison in Florence, Colorado, where you'll be spending a whopping 23 hours a day inside your cell just enjoying the confines of your own mind, you know what I'm saying? Now I'd be doing you a disservice, Internet, if I said it was easy to get into this institution, because it really isn't. The directors at ADX are looking for the brightest and the biggest stars of the criminal world, you know what I'm saying? I'm talking about the Unabomber Ted Kaczynski. I'm talking about the whole starting lineup of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, you know what I'm saying? I'm talking about the would-be shoe bomber, Richard Reed, who looked like the only Keebler elf to ever get laid off. I'm talking about Terry Nichols, an accomplice to the Oklahoma City bombing, you know what I'm saying? This is a fucking blue-chip institution, Internet, you know what I'm saying? You gotta get your game up if you want to get the director's attention of ADX, you know what I'm saying? You just can't shoot a bunch of niggas or touch a few children or get caught with a few guns or drugs in your car trunk, you know what I'm saying? You gotta go for the gusto, man. You gotta climb them criminal stairs, niggas. Come on, let's go. Now, what can I say about this next institution which hasn't already been said by human rights advocates or S&M enthusiasts worldwide who simply go nuts for the pictures that come out of this place? Yeah, you guessed it right, y'all. I'm talking about Abu Ghraib, you know what I'm saying? Saddam Hussein uses place to torture motherfuckers. The United States military used this place for enhanced team building exercises. And the U.S. trained Iraqi police force is most likely gonna use this place to torture motherfuckers too. I mean, what can I say about Abu Ghraib? It's just one of those institutions that shines no matter who the director is, you know what I'm saying? And if you a light brown nigga such as myself, you definitely gotta make a trip out to Abu Ghraib. You know, I plan on a trip myself once my Kickstarter is showing a little bit more promise. Let's go on to the next one. Why come modernism always gets such a bad rap nowadays? You know what I'm saying? You always hear us contemporary folk without contemporary cynicism, always deriding those foolish artists of the early 20th century, you know what I'm saying? Always shitting on their quote-unquote failed avant-garde project or talking about how silly their notions of utopia was. I mean, what's wrong with a little bit of utopia, right? You know what I'm saying? Bluebird on my shoulder, you know what I'm saying? Happy, shiny people laughing, you know what I'm saying? Maybe utopias get such a bad rap because every time someone tries to create a utopia in actuality, they end up creating a totalitarianist regime. They end up creating something like the next institution on my list, Auschwitz, Adolf Hitler's megaplex of Germano-Aryan utopian fucked upness. When you enter Auschwitz, you're killed immediately, or you're worked to death, or you get to live and work, but you get to see everyone die around you, or you live, but you get all types of fucked up experiments conducted on you by scientists who were later hired by the U.S. government, and then you died after the experiments, of course. This kind of brutality, so systematically executed in such a bureaucratically efficient manner, is why Auschwitz was and still is the premier institution of the 20th century, making the MoMA look like nothing more than an overglorified collection of thrift store paintings. Now, when talking about the number one institution on my list, I have to defer to my homie Cat Williams.
This shit right here, nigga. This shit right here, nigga. Right here, this shit, nigga. This shit here, nigga.
To even capture but a fraction of this institution's impact upon the world. You know what I'm talking about, right, Internet? Come on. Talking about the transatlantic slave trade, come on. This is the reason why the Flower de Amistad even exists. The reason why you got niggas living in nowhere-ass places like Nova Scotia. The reason why Ice Cube is always going to have them angry eyes even though he's a multi-jillionaire. The reason why niggas such as myself, a nigga like me, skin is so diluted that I'm the complexion of a peanut shell. The reason why niggas got that ill chain fetish. The reason why capitalism is the predominant economic system in the world today. How can capitalism not run the world with a foundation of epically abundant free labor? For global capitalism, slavery was like,
more money, more money, more money.
Anyway, Internet, that's about it. I hope this video was informative. I hope I've double and wisened you about institutional critique. You know what I'm saying? I just love y'all to death, and I just want to shine my light on y'all, whether y'all want it or not. Peace. One love.
Whether you want it or not, Hennessy. Thank you. So I'm, you know, it's still a project that I'm continuing. But the writing aspect of the Hennessy stuff does actually take a while, because, again, it's a performance. I mean, it's weird. You know, I grew up listening to hip-hop, and hip-hop and rap music is very, very, very dear to me. But sometimes I think, like, if I had no personal, like, evolution in my life, I probably would really be Hennessy, except I probably wouldn't talk about art at all. I guess there's a few more images, like three more images, and then I'm done, and you guys can yell at me or throw shoes at me, you know? This is a painting I did. This is, like, from my thesis show. Over the course of, like, 9 months, I was collecting Coogi sweaters, which are these... they're kind of made popular by Notorious B.I.G. and Bill Cosby, and they're, you know, they're these sweaters that... definitely, to me, they have a very, very, very painterly textile, a very, very painterly design to them. And I started a blog as Hennessy, and I remember the first blog entry was an uploading. I uploaded this picture of a Coogi sweater and Hennessy in the blog. I also talk about Hennessy as if he's a person and not me. And Hennessy had said it looked, the sweater looked like a Pollock. And then that was like a joke for the blog, but then I was like, all right, there's some. Actually, what would happen if I try to take a commodity that was, you know, based on appropriating kind of painterly gesture, then return this commodity back into this art object? And this is the first attempt. I didn't know how to sew when this one was made. So my friend Kurt, my life partner, my role dog, he can sew. He can do a lot of things too. So I helped. I kind of gave him some loose instructions. I cut the sweaters up and he put them together, and then. This is what, you know, the me and Kurt collabo. And then while I was this summer, I went to the Skowhegan residency. It's artist residency in Maine that you all should apply to if you feel up to it and have the courage. But it was really, 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 really amazing. So I had 9 weeks where I had a studio and I just worked. I made that institutional critique video and I made this smaller piece. I just taught myself how to sew. So this one is just, you know, this is like one sweater repurposed into a painting, and this is the one I'm working on right now. This is going to be longer, but yeah, sewing is fun. It's also interesting to kind of, you know, how this painting, these sweaters, kind of riff on, like, to me, like Abex painting and kind of all that masculine rhetoric surrounding Abex painting, and then kind of approaching that form of painting through this cliched feminine method, which is sewing. So I'm kind of trying to enter this, you know, this big heroic realm with my brother sewing machine. And, you know, that's it, guys. Thanks a lot. Yeah, so I'm fresh out of grad school, so I know what comes next. So.
It's not a
critique. Oh, no, I know, but at Skowhegan we had some pretty long...
we had some pretty long question and answer sessions. So, but the artist Judy Pfaff, she took like two questions and then I think she went to bed. So, which is, after that I fell in love with her. I don't care if we're decades apart in age. Anybody questions? Anybody brave enough? Oh, come on. Look, I'm a clown. No question. You have no. Honestly, if you don't have any questions, that would be amazing. But that, I don't want to discourage you from asking me questions. Is that a shoe flying at me? No, come on. Wow, this is amazing.
I have a question.
All right, cool.
Did you shoot your own videos?
Those videos?
Yeah.
They were shot on a webcam on a computer. This is not my computer, but a MacBook. I kind of that, like with the Too Black for BET. Posters is a very, very simple means. You know, there's the writing, there's the file that I just photocopy. I print out into 11 by 17, take it to Kinko's and make a larger version of it. And for this, even though, you know, an Apple computer costs quite a lot, the means of just filming it were pretty simple, you know. No, I don't really like collaborating, so having to, kind of imposing on someone to help me with shots. It's much easier for me just to do this by myself. I don't know what it is. I never really liked working with people except for, I guess, like music stuff. Yeah.
You repeated several times that you were a writer, and I think you are. But then at the very end, you showed us these marvelous...
I know, it's troubling. Yeah. It's, I can show that to you again. I call them paintings. They started in humor, you know, and they started kind of come out of a blog post of all places. And then when I started making them, and showing them to people, they kind of had their own, you know, like aesthetic validity, which was like troubling for me because, I mean, obviously I like that I was able to actually finally, after years and years of making art, to make something that just is like, oh, look at that pretty thing. You know, like I can never, it's impossible for me to make something like that can just be aesthetically like substantial in and of its own self. So, but it's interesting. It's a new space. It's very, very new. So, I don't know how I'm going to really traverse that. I don't know. Make more. I don't know. Wait, you're next, and you wait.
So you're making the Kuja paintings, and you're writing, and you're doing the Hansi video. So did you abandon the kitty paintings? And
no, I actually I haven't made any in a while, but I still keep notes. I still keep notes on different ideas for those paintings. Since those paintings actually don't even start. That those paintings actually come out of text too. The text comes first, and then the image comes out of the text. It never, the image is like not really that primary. But I'll get to them. Yeah, because they're pleasing. They're fun to make. You know, get to be silly. And wait.
Yeah.
And then you in the hat. You then him. Yeah. Sorry.
Among all the work you did, which one? If I ask you which one you felt better or more comfortable doing?
The one I feel more comfortable doing. They all kind of satisfy different parts of my, different parts of me, I guess. I always say that I'm actually the happiest when I'm just drawing, when I'm not writing and... Because humor is a lot of work, but actually, I really enjoy writing. But I think I'm actually the happiest when I'm just drawing, even though I didn't show any of the drawings. Because I'm trying to create a narrative that kind of leads up to the Hennessy videos. Let's pretend I don't draw and I have to pick something out of those. Let me like get out of that and look through them. I think it might be the painting. The paintings like might be like my favorite, you know? I think it might be the paintings. Like that's still one of my I don't know.
That's still so much about writing.
Yeah, it is about writing, but I don't know. It's because it's just cheap paint, $4 brushes, you know. But again, it all comes out of text, so it's all about writing for me, you know. But I think the paintings might be, you know, the Hennessy stuff is fun. It's still a lot of work. Not to say that I'm lazy. It's just this is like more immediate, maybe. You know. Those are tempera. Yeah, those are all tempera. Yeah, Utrecht tempera. They make the best tempera. Not Lick or any other fancy company. Wait. The hat.
Did you find when you were making music, did you ever come into contact with people that you looked up to and found them just as square as like your professors?
People I idolized?
Yeah. I mean,
like people who made music or artists?
Music, like just the music.
Like making music? Making the kind of rap music that I made at the time that I made it, I met a lot of other derelicts and bums. Those are like a lot of my friends are like back in Philly are like DJs and musicians and people. I have artist friends, but people I idolized. Who have I idolized that I met in music? No, they're bums. They have more money than me, but they're still. I never met anyone that's like too square or too like a really big disappointment. I definitely have met people that I've idolized. Or I've been in the same room as them, and I'm just like, I'm not going to talk to them. I don't want to, I don't want to talk to them. Like, I remember Plastic Little, there's this British rapper named Dizzy Rascal, and I love some of Dizzy's songs, but we went on tour with him, and Dizzy didn't want to have anything to do with us. We were too, like, weird for him, We're just like, real, real weird dudes, so he didn't want to really have anything to do with us. Yeah, I think his friends tried to sabotage one of our shows once, but yeah. I never ever met anyone who's, like, really disappointed me, I try also not to really, I think it's kind of dangerous sometimes to look up to people, too, because heroes always, to me, they always disappoint, maybe. I don't know, maybe that's a deep-seated cynicism on my part, but I try not to, because heroes are just—they're just people, and maybe they have more time to do a certain thing, but that time is available to anyone to do that. So, be your own master. I think that's like Dianetics, right? Any other? Wait, there's someone. No, wait. One, then the tea hat.
I was gonna—you know—when you kind of it's like stealth art, pull out the Hennessy, videos at the end of.
Yeah.
I was kind of curious about the response because on one
hand, they liked it. there were some critiques, but overall it went over really positively. Like I was walking into this review like this is it, this is the experiment of graduate school is over, but it worked out. And then initially when I actually made the Hennessy videos, I wasn't going to put them online. I kind of thought of them as a, like fine art videos to be shown in a gallery setting, emulating this YouTube vernacular. And then one of the critics, woman named Charlotte Cotton, she's a really awesome person. She kind of challenged me and said that the Hennessy work, for them to function, you should put them in the environment that you're borrowing from, which is not, that's debatable. But I did it, and it seemed to work out because I'm here talking to you guys, which is, which is definitely something I never really thought, would come out of this project, because it's, if you look at stuff, videos on YouTube, looking at videos related to art, they have a very, very low viewership in comparison to, say, Tay Zonday or, Bed Intruder dude. Why can't I remember him? Hide Your Wife, Hide Your Kids. What's his name? Why can't I remember his name? This is crazy. I'm getting old. Tay Zonday and yes, thank you. That's terrible. Is art, fine art stuff on the web definitely does have a low viewership. And then talking about art in the way that I was talking about, I didn't really think that there would be an audience for that kind of work, for that project. It's just definitely something that I just did to do it, and it just kind of worked out. I'm pretty stubborn too, in that, I make the text work, and the text work is so dense, but there's rewards for reading it, but it's just like, it's hard. It's a hard object. It's like a hard thing to kind of deal with as a quote unquote art object, it's not a skull, I'm not even going to bring up those conversations, but And
what was your decision to use the Flaming Lips cover for?
The notion. I always had this theory that, in, you know, well, it's not really. I think it's been established that in movies you can inflict an infinite amount of pain on ninjas, robots, and Nazis, and so. You know, the something like Pink Robots has such like a correlation to like anime, and like Pink Robots being this unceasing army of like enemies, and the cover. I always like the cover. I always like the cover painting. So it just kind of just came about. You know, it's a good painting. I kind of didn't really do it justice. Where is it? I don't know, it's like the first one. There we go. Yeah, I messed up the Wolverine claws. Yeah. I like my color mixing there though. That's like Renaissance there. Anyone else? I saw there's another hand back there. One. You're the last one.
Did you feel the same way like as the Europeans like about Obama during the election?
Yeah, I mean. You know, I got a lot of, when I showed those paintings, people thought I was kind of lampooning Obama, but I really wasn't. I mean,